All right, everyone, good afternoon. Today is May 24th, 2016, and this is the House Interim Committee on Rules. We are going to have an informational meeting today, and I just want to start by thanking Representative Wilson for asking for this informational hearing. I'm glad we can have it today. We are limited to 1 hour, so I just want to put that out there now. At the witching hour of 3 o'clock, I will be adjourning the meeting. So with that, I'm going to, I guess, open our informational hearing and invite up our Secretary of State. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee. I am Jean Atkins, Secretary of State. I'm pleased to come and update you on the Oregon Motor Voter Program, and in particular to talk about the second stage of implementation, which we'll accomplish this summer, and I think was a particular question that folks wanted to talk about. With me is Joe Williams, who gives a space between us a little bit, so to protect him, here to help me with questions for the most part and support. In the audience, we do have our deputy director, a couple members of our executive team, and deputy director of elections, Cody Trudell, and Oregon Motor Voter Project director, Seamus Hannon. So if we get too deep into the weeds, they can be a resource to us. So I did want to open by acknowledging that, as you're aware, Election Day was a week ago here in Oregon. It's worth noting up front, and I'll say it more than once, I think, that more ballots were cast on May 17th than ever before in a primary election in Oregon. I'm not going to tie that to Oregon Motor Voter, but just note that that you may have questions about the elections process, and we will do our best to answer those questions today if you have them at the end of my testimony. I'd like you to please bear in mind that as you think of questions, which may just be occurring to you now, that our election results are unofficial until they're certified by the Secretary of State's office. That'll happen no later than June 16th. And until that time, Oregon's county clerks will continue their processing of results. At this point, and moving forward, particularly focused on counting write-in votes. Because this was the first election with a third major party holding a publicly run primary, and because there were numerous races for which there were not candidates filed, write-ins for an unprecedented number of positions will need to be counted, and those have to be done by hand, and generally in the business process of the counties, that's after the tabulation of the rest of the votes. I want to repeat that the 1.2 million ballots that were cast broke a record for the number of voters participating in a primary election, surpassing the record set in 2008. And for that reason, I want to publicly commend Oregon's county clerks for their execution of what we believe was a very secure, successful, and historic election. So now to focus a little bit more directly on Oregon Motor Voter, you have in front of you our latest data report on the program. It was released on May 10th, providing data through the end of April. Our next report will be released on June 10th.
We don't
have it. You don't?
We don't.
Oh, I thought that the data sheet was also. Do we have sheets? I'm sorry. Okay, it will be in front of you. It will show. We do release and put on our website data monthly related to the Oregon Motor Voter Program. It's posted on our website at the same time and right alongside the registration numbers, which you're probably used to being posted on a monthly basis. Our report for the month of April showed that since implementation on January 1st of this year, registration information for 51,558 new voters had been forwarded to the counties for the final processing. I'm pleased to report, as I did back in January, that our rollout of the program has been without major incident or complaint. We've received positive feedback from many Oregonians and continue to hear praise from national organizations and other states that are looking to Oregon as a model for democratic engagement. With last week's election now behind us, I'm anticipating that the questions that we're going to need to answer about the final status of those registrations, the voting behavior of the OMV registered voters that happened on May 17th. We're currently working on this analysis, but I want to note something pretty important. We're very proud of the number of unregistered Oregonians who have been contacted and whose registration processes were started, but understand that the entire group at this point consists of about 2% of the 2.3 million voters who are registered in Oregon. So for this election, that's really important to kind of keep in perspective. We should have more information in the coming weeks about how many of these newly registered Oregonians were in fact registered in time for the registration deadline. Remember, that was April 26th, and our data at the moment runs through April 30th, so we've got to work backwards from that. Some of them may not have turned 18 by the May election, and so some will not vote until the next election after that. And sometimes people leave the voter rolls for a variety of reasons. It's a very dynamic database as people move, as things change in their lives. And so we'll get to you a report of how many folks that have been registered through this program were actually eligible to vote on the 17th, and then ultimately how many did cast a ballot. But our priority has had to be, this hearing came a little bit quickly for us after the election. Our priority is to get the election certified so that we can know that we've included every ballot and every action that's happened. So one more thing I'd like to know about Oregon Motor Voter and this election. As a number of people have noted in recent weeks, that so many OMV voters are registered as non-affiliated voters, which of course many Oregonians not registered through OMV are as well. And about it makes evaluation of their voting records in a primary election that is focused on selecting party nominees, mostly through a closed system, probably isn't going to be the best test of how many or in what ways this registration program will end up encouraging the ultimate participation, which is voting. We look forward then to, after our initial look from the primary, to looking at the November election, where the most high-profile candidates are all on everybody's ballot, and they have the opportunity to make those choices. So for that reason more, I really encourage us all to take a long view of the OMV program when you're assessing how things are working. This election gives us our first metric to assess participation, but it'll take a number of years for us to really understand the exact effects of the program. I think we can say so far so good, but we have a lot to learn over the next several election cycles as this pioneering program becomes the norm for voter registration in Oregon. So to briefly tell you about what we call phase two, some people refer to as the reach back, which was, I think, what you mostly wanted me to talk about today. Part of the vision of Oregon Motor Voter when it was passed and the authority granted to the Secretary of State's office through House Bill 2177 was to take steps to assure that Oregonians who had established themselves as eligible for voter registration at the DMV in the two-year window before the program started up could be registered through this program. We made the decision to get the program up and running going forward before we addressed the reach back to the previous 2 years. So since the program phase one started up, we have engaged in a rulemaking process for this stage of the process, started in February. As we did for the Oregon Motor Voter rules adopted last fall, we did a rules advisory committee with stakeholders to talk about what this might mean. And we did a public hearing before adopting the final rules. In general, these records and the way the data is treated, the communication to these Oregonians will be consistent, if not identical, to those used now on a daily basis for people coming into Department of Motor Vehicles. You have the outreach letter that is going to be part of this program. If you compare it to the outreach letter we gave you in a packet last January, you'll see it varies slightly in terms of its introduction, making sure that people understand that it was a DMV visit in a certain month of 2014 or a certain month of 2015 that initiated this process.
The set of DMV records that we're working with for this phase is essentially those Oregonians who had licenses, permits, or IDs issued during the period between January 1st, 2014 and December 31st, 2015, and who have not returned to the DMV to amend or establish a new record since then. One reality of this database of 2014 and 2015 transactions is that it changed daily over a period of time. It shrinks as people cycle back through the DMV again. And so we've been careful to wait until as soon as possible before our mailing in order to capture those changes. We're also have been through the process, going through the process of matching this data against U.S. Postal Service change of address databases, multi-state database that we work with to help us find people who have registered elsewhere or possibly died since they were issued their DMV card in those years. We started working through about 845,000 records in this cleanup process, and then the next step, of course, was to match it against our centralized voter registration data to determine who is not currently already registered to vote. And I'd like to speak briefly to that matching process because I think it's an important one. We kind of have a dual commitment to this program that we balance all of the time. We want to reach as many Oregonians who are eligible to vote as we can, and we want to avoid frustrating Oregonians by sending them a notice that we're starting an automatic process to register them if they're already registered. So the matching process becomes obviously very, very important. Yeah. It takes some care. It's not just an automated process, electronic process that sorts the records. Our team has developed algorithms for matching that have identified which key elements of the record, when they are matched, give us a very high confidence that the individual is registered. And where there are weaker or only partial match elements, individual review is completed before the letter is sent. I want to give credit to the elections team for undertaking what is really an extra effort, a manual effort in this process. I'd be foolish to say that we have a system that guarantees us there will never be a mistake, but we believe that our attention to this detail has been the reason that we've had so few complaints about the program. So for the future, as you evaluate this for other programs, give other agencies space to do this would be a piece of advice. As that review has become complete, our current estimate is that on June 10th, we will send to more than 147,000 Oregonians a letter very similar to the one that we send on a daily basis to Oregonians now. We expect all the steps of the process for this cohort, which will happen not on, you know, on a rollout basis, but actually be one mailing, including the 21 days that everybody will have to opt out if they want to opt out or to add a party registration if they'd like to do that, and including time for county processing to discover who is already registered in another way or who came in yesterday to cancel or whatever might have taken place in that intervening time, and that for that all to be completed by the end of August. Whether the response of this group, and now I guess you do have it in front of you, which helps you understand sort of how people are reacting. Yes, and the pie graph shows you how many people have returned asking to opt out, how many people have registered with a party as part of their process. The stunning revelation that we had that they're, you know, they can be in the DMV 1 week and the next week that address is invalid again. So things change rapidly in people's lives, so you'll see that data there. Whether the response of this group of that are involved in the 2014-2015 data, whether how they look at the opportunity to opt out, the opportunity to include a party registration, or the opportunity to do nothing and know that they'll get a ballot at the next election, whether it will be different or the same for this group, as we are now reporting for the daily intake, we really won't know until we complete the process. I think perhaps that's as much as I should tell you up front, and I look forward to coming back in the future, obviously, to share some more. Thank you for your good attention, and I'm happy, Jim and I are happy to take any questions that you might have.
I just want to start by thanking you and your staff, both for getting us through the election while doing this process. You've done a great job, and so I want to say thank you personally. And it's really exciting to hear how Oregon is moving in the direction of creating more voters. And that's ultimately the goal of this, and automatic voter registration along with vote by mail, which I don't understand why every state doesn't have vote by mail, really makes our process accessible. And so I want to thank you for your work. Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I too appreciate completely what you've been doing. You've gotten a great deal of positive press about it, and it's deserved. And your predecessor, of course, gets a great deal of credit for having worked this thing right up to the point that she moved on to another office. The question I have is a specific one. Do you inform the Department of Motor Vehicles when it turns out that there's an undeliverable letter? Because, of course, the driver's license has lost its validity as well.
Sometimes they have already learned that, but I do believe that we share back and forth the address invalidations that come our way. Do you agree, Jim? Are the people in the back of us going?
Right. They're the ones that would know.
So there's not a clear indication from the back row. It's nodding, so.
Well, it's simply a question of agencies talking to each other about things that they have mutual interest in.
We are in fact in very good communication, as we've talked about before. The fact that we are also are able to access address updates have allowed our counties to update voter registration things aside from new voters as part of this process, and have been we think a substantial benefit. I will get you a very specific answer about whether once it comes back to us, whether that cycled back through the Department of Motor Vehicles. I believe that it is, but I will confirm and answer for the
There's
record.
There's a lifeline coming.
The NHTSA. We do share, there's a 2%, 2% undeliverable, and we do share that back with the DMV.
Great, that's they good.
And we do not share. Okay.
And I actually have it.
Oh, sorry, I misread.
Okay.
Okay. Well, we'll talk about that in the program and whether there's a more efficient way to do that. Generally speaking, they are receiving the same information that we're receiving.
If there's a problem with a statute, I hope you'll let us know.
Absolutely.
With your
I suspect
passing that. Information the other direction.
Right.
The other question, if I could. The way this format is set up, people don't have to give you a reason for opting out. Have you gotten very many of those? And if so, can you give us a hint as to what people's reasons are for opting out?
No, there isn't a place on the form. We have not necessarily tracked there. We do get the occasional nasty gram on a card. You know, it isn't that people don't speak their mind about that, but it's not our concern. It's not a concern for us what their reason is. We just act on the will of the voter. One of the issues that we went through and had some debate about, and some advocacy groups might speak to this as well, is that once they have opted out, assuming they don't register on their own by another means, which can also happen, they might go and register, but when they come back through the Department of Motor Vehicles for a renewal, we keep that opt-out record and they're contacted again. So there was some discussion about the possibility that maybe somebody would change their mind 8 years later and want to be part of the system, but we felt like honoring that their refusal would be very important to do.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Questions? Representative Wilson.
Yeah, Madam Secretary, thank you for being here today. I do appreciate that. Mr. Williams, good to see you again, as always. Wanted to ask a couple of questions about this process. One of those things that strikes me is that no one will be as privy as you to the kinds of complaint calls that you have received as a result of this process. I'm sure you've heard from county clerks. They've probably talked to you about the calls that they have received, and I know a number of folks have probably called you during this last election cycle to lodge complaints for various reasons. Forgive me if I'm being presumptuous, but anything that is this huge, anything that is this big and attempting to chase down databases and match databases has got to be fraught with difficulty. But with that said, I do want to ask about the nature and the volume of calls that you may have received in the weeks running up to the election. And would you say there were a lot of calls, very few calls? And with the people that did call, could you characterize what their concerns were about the process?
Jim, would you like to speak to that? And let's, Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, I'll let our elections director speak to who took many calls. I'm sure during that period. If you're asking, and try to clarify, if you're asking about questions that would be related to OM, the Oregon Motor Voter, I'm sure that Jim will describe to you a good many calls from voters at the county level as well as the state level about the primary election itself, and from a variety of voters, no matter how they were registered. I think we reported back to you in January, and I believe that it is held very true that our daily mailings to voters, we thought about setting up a call room and thinking we're going to send 750, 800 pieces of mail a day. We're going to get a rush, particularly as the public gets used to this. We ended up hiring a couple of temps. We sent one of them home the second day because we really did not get that kind of volume on this process. Whether the OMV voters were more likely to have other kinds of concerns, I think we would have a little trouble sorting through, but we might, make some effort. But I'll certainly let Jim speak to the kinds of complaint calls that they normally, and volume-wise, normally come in, and perhaps what was in this election cycle.
Thank you.
Thank you, yeah. Madam Secretary, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wilson. The Secretary is correct. We received thousands of calls, people, some with complaints and questions about the process. Tiny fraction of those, and probably on one or two hands could count the ones that were related to OMV issues. It really just kind of got lost in the shuffle. Most of those were general procedural questions about how it worked and what happens if I'm late returning my card, or what if I accidentally picked the wrong party, questions like that. Very general, and we did not receive a lot of vocal complaints at all about the program.
Good. Well, let me switch subjects then and ask you for a moment about the registration changes that resulted in a number of people being sent a replacement ballot. Made the news. I heard about it down in Grants Pass repeatedly on various news services. Was this anticipated? Did you expect this to happen this way? And in mitigating that circumstance, did you kind of make it up as you went along, and that is how to fix this situation? Or was it something that you had anticipated and you were fully ready to take care of?
Do you want to start?
Sure.
I'll fill in.
Could go ahead and talk about the situation, if folks didn't read about it in the media or hear about it, that'd be great, a little background.
Sure.
Great. Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wilson, the issue you're speaking to is about the fact that some voters may be mailed more than one ballot. This is a common occurrence in any election system, but most notably in a vote-by-mail system. That can be for a number of reasons. For example, I think one of the most prevalent this year is the fact that we had a high number of people changing their political party affiliation toward the last week leading up to the deadline. The truth of the matter is that especially some of the larger counties had already gathered, at the deadline or very close to it, had already made their first pull of voter data to start preparing ballots. That is something that's a very lengthy and time-consuming process. The counties typically like to get an early start on that. The truth of the matter is that it is a common occurrence in every election. We do take steps to try to educate the public about the reason for that and why it's necessary. We are certainly open to ideas that legislators may have about something that would help mitigate that situation, but I think that the basic truth of the matter is that it's just the nature of the game, there are going to be some people that might receive a second ballot under some circumstances.
Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wilson, if I could add to that, sorry to interrupt Jimmy,
probably had a valuable point to say. I'm sorry. With a voter registration deadline of April 26th for a May 17th election, we have committed, the counties have committed to getting the ballots to people 3 weeks before the election, so they have them in hand. That puts those deadlines right up against each other, and this is what results. There are other reasons, perhaps Jim was going to say, that people would get a second ballot. They spelled coffee all over the ballot they had. It was destroyed. They don't think they ever got it. They come in and prove that they're registered, and another one is issued. And we could talk about the protections built into the system about people not being able to vote both of those ballots, which I'm sure is of concern. But I think as you look at a variety of things, including their proposals, of course, for same-day voter registration, that timing and the ability of people to get their ballots in a timely manner up against a registration date, it's almost impossible to make sure that the registration information the day the ballot is mailed is identical. So I think Jim is right in explaining to you that this is an expected process. It is a process every year. We had a big election with a lot of changes because of a little more visible presidential primary than we're used to having in Oregon. But and if you would like us to go through and Jim can tell you the process of what happens when a ballot's issued, and then when a second ballot is issued, how we deal with making sure that both ballots don't get counted, if that's of interest.
Yeah, I would be interested in that.
Yes, Madam Co-Chair, the system, Oregon Centralized Voter Registration System, that includes the election management, basically flags that ballot. If a second one is issued, it basically inactivates the first one and says that the second one has been issued, and that is the valid ballot to be cast for this voter. So when the county receives it in, scans it into the system, it immediately shows up on the screen if this was the most recent ballot, the correct ballot to be counted or not.
Or if it wasn't. But it's not, and it should not be counted.
Right, right.
Great, thank you.
Yeah. I got a few more, but I'll yield for now.
All right. Yeah, this is a piece of follow-up, if I may. I know there's some changes that a voter can make right up to the deadline on election night and still be issued a ballot. I think address is one of those. I moved from Hood River to Portland. Didn't get a ballot. I arrived 5 minutes before the election deadline and say I want a ballot by new address. I think you issue that. How about voter registration changes? Are those things that can be done late as well or not?
Madam Co-Chair.
I'm sorry, party registration.
Right.
That's what I mean. A registered voter switching from one party to another.
That has to occur before the voter registration deadline of April 26th.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Representative Gilliam.
Thank you. I'm sort of in the middle here. Is that a promotion?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, you got a promotion.
I appreciate that what you said, that you're not going to have final numbers till June 16th. Could you ballpark for me how many write-ins I got for governor? No, I have a serious question.
Oh, Mr. Vice Chair, I'm sure there were dozens and dozens of them.
More? Oh, Phil says zero. I've heard, and there's no documentation, that as you referred, we had a high-profile presidential primary, and that one or more candidates may or may not have found a way to legally use our new law to boost their support. Have you heard this? If you have, what were the numbers, and how was money involved?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, I have not heard any such thing. I'm sorry if there's a rumor out there that hasn't hit our office and others know of it. We would welcome any information. Certainly, as in any campaign season, the names, the electorate, the report of the electorate, the voter registration lists are available to campaigns, and we know that they that there were campaigns who contacted voters, contacted them in advance of the registration deadline and encouraged party registration, or perhaps encouraged asking for an independent party ballot, which was something people could do without changing their registration. I mean, a variety of things and a variety of candidates that reached out in that way. How people would seek to insert people into the DMV data in order to somehow get them on voter registration rolls, it would be very difficult, and I can't, we have had no indication of that being the case. Really would encourage folks that you hear from to be in contact with us.
Mm-hmm. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. You may have touched on this earlier when you were talking about phase two, and I missed it. Okay. Are we, and how long before phase two will be activated and people will be added to the voter registration list? Will that be in time for the November election, or what's the timeline?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Kenemer. Yes, the mailing to them will happen on June 10th is our target for when we will be doing that mailing, and we expect the entire process to have run. That is, people have received their mailing, they've had their 21 days to opt out or to add a party registration, and for the process where we move data to the counties and they double check everything before they finalize that registration, for all of that to be accomplished by the end of August.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Further question here would be, do we have any idea what the turnout, percentage of turnout was with Oregon Motor voters?
We're not able to tell you today. We kind of hope to, and we've begun down the path of trying to do that investigation, and I would hope to get information to you soon about that. At the moment, as I say, we still really are counting on the fact that we're trying to hold back in the fact that ballots are still being completed as we go forward. But we do plan to provide for you all numbers of those who did vote and added what probably are new registrations because of the of new voters because of the program, and try to make some comparisons with the rest of the voting population. Mm-hmm. And I think that we know that's of interest, and it's something that we need to prepare for. So we're kind of in process with it at the moment. I wouldn't want to give a guesstimate.
Madam Chair, thank you for the follow-up. Will we at some point in time be able to assess what the cost is of the Motor Voter Program? I know you've mentioned in the reach back here, it looks like we'll be spending about $70,000 just simply in postage soon to reach out to the reach back group, so to speak. So back to the original question, will we be able to know at some point in time what the full cost of the Oregon Motor Voter System is?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, absolutely. You will. We have accountability through the Ways and Means process for the budget that was allocated for this, and the federal HAVA funds that have been used in this project. And I think you'll be able to look at a per voter, sort of cost at some point down the line. I don't know whether your dollar amount is right. We certainly take advantage of the bulk and the lowest rate. We coordinate, as many state agencies do, with Department of Administrative Services, so that sometimes we're bulking with other mailings from other agencies in order to always get that constant lower rate. Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether your estimate is right or not for what this particular portion will cost, but we will have to report back, and you'll have to look at the budget that's been spent and make that evaluation as we move forward.
Thank you.
Do we know, Madam Secretary, how many, what the total of HAVA funds were that did you have a pot of federal dollars separate and distinct for this project?
It isn't separate and distinct for this process. There are some general funds involved, which we were given for some systems issues. There are some general funds involved that are going to counties to account for a greater workload that the additional registration comes from. We also have a Help America Vote Act funds that the agency has had for several years and is always in active discussion about what next is the best use for them. So I don't want to ballpark it.
Okay, thank you.
But we can certainly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The secrecy envelope. Seemed like there's been some changes there. And so I wanted to ask about that. When did that happen? Obviously, I guess through administrative rule. But could you tell us about that, why we've gone from a secrecy envelope to, in many cases, a secrecy sleeve?
Right, Madam Co-Chair, Representative Wilson, I'll speak to that. That has not been a universal change statewide. There are some individual counties who have made decisions to change some of their design. And it, really, several factors went into the decision for them to make the request of us to make the change. Cost, the biggest issue, I think, with them is processing time. The amount of time it takes to run two sealed envelopes through an opening machine and then back to the boards to process all of the ballots. I would say that I think we have heard some of the phone calls we referenced earlier were about this subject as well, and we try to take the opportunity to educate the voters on the entire process of how ballots are opened and are passed through and let them know how and why. Even the new design of secrecy envelope serves the same purpose as a sealed envelope. And if I could briefly explain that, basically, when the ballots come to the county to be processed, they are opened and processed by a team of two people. The first person just removes the inner contents from the outer envelope, which has the voter's signature on it, and then sets aside that signature and sets the ballot over and hands it off to the next person or into a stack for the next person, who then would remove the ballot from the inner envelope. The point being, at no point in time is someone looking at the actual voted ballot with the voter's signature here. So those two remain separated throughout the process, and that is something that is uniform in all of the counties. That type of processing is designed around protecting the secrecy of a voter's ballot.
Interesting. Maybe one final.
Okay.
In looking at the process as was just executed here in this primary election, what are the things that, as you look at the process, say to yourself, we've got to refine that process, or we've got to tweak that process that wasn't exactly the way we expected it to be? What would the processes be that you might be interested in refining as we go?
I'll start and let Jim do, Madam Chair, Representative Wilson. That is a question better asked when we get done, because I think there will be some discussion that we'll have internally and think about the overall process. We're kind of still midpoint in it, so don't hold me to this being, you know, sort of the only answer. We will look, I'm sure, at the double ballot issue and look at, you know, and sort of ask for county feedback about, you know, how much advance preparation there has to be, whether they think there are better ways to inform the public what their concerns are. So it won't just be a Secretary of State conversation. We need that input from our partners to do that. We will probably look at how was it for them handling the volume of changes that happened at the end of the cycle this time, because of a really an unusually high level of interest as there was in this primary. Usually we're not in Oregon kind of at that point in the historical process of presidential selection. So is there something that we could have done differently? We still continue, and those of you who maybe follow our Ways and Means discussions will hear us to hope that the smooth transition of data on election night from the counties to our to the state website and our ability ability to report a coordinated state report to the public continue to be improved. That's an area that's been of long concern, and people are working at it. You know, it's a little bit of a tough one, but I'll defer to Jim. He may have some on his hot list which he could say, but I do think, I mean, we will do this kind of evaluation when we're complete.
Madam Secretary, I think you covered most of my general early observations at this point. The only other thing regarding the election night results is that is, again, you mentioned that we need to change that process, and something that we have begun a project to implement a new election night reporting system, so that what you see on our website on election night is hopefully much more detailed and efficient as far as the timing of posting of those results. That's one of the early goals we have for the general election.
And if I could, Madam Chair, just very, very briefly say, it's been of great interest to me as a new Secretary of State, particularly leading up to the May election, to visit with county clerks and to visit their facilities and to understand what the process is like. Every single one of them, and I hope to have been to all of them by November, have very different facilities, very different shapes and sizes and numbers of temporary staff as well as permanent staff that work on things. It is, but it's very impressive to see how consistent, as Jim talked about, the steps are and the commitments are and what they try to accomplish, even if they have to move from building to building with their ballots because they can't be stored here or the tabulation machine doesn't fit there. I really encourage you to visit your county clerks and ask them. I think they're very proud of their security systems, some of which were supported by some federal funds a few years back, so that they could create the ability for observers to watch through cameras so they could know always as a ballot tracks through their system that there's more than one person, you know, that's watching that system. It's been a great revelation to me to go through that in various counties, large and small, and I'd encourage you to do that. It may help you feel like you can describe to your constituents more completely what the process is like.
Great, thank you. You mentioned, Madam Secretary, a couple of times the high interest in the presidential primary, and I think it's got to be quite a chore to be implementing the motor voter process while everyone is so interested in the primary. What are some of the things you've seen because of the high interest in the primary that in a normal election cycle you wouldn't have seen? Like, I would assume, a double ballot sort of situation. Are there other things that were related much more to the engagement of voters in the primary process that were unusual?
I'm probably not the best person to talk about an unusual or unusual election cycle. This was my first in this role, so it was all unusual to me, but also very, very usual. At one point, we certainly did, I'll let Jim answer that question, but I will say at one point, the revelation or the repeated understanding of that people do not distinguish between primary elections and general elections. An election is an election, and the perception that this largely closed primary was a barrier to them voting. They wanted to choose between the one Republican and one Democratic candidate. I mean, they had, and the amount of surprise that many voters who were registered before OMV or through OMV had about the ballots that they received, probably because there was such high attention around it, then it came home to them. Oh, I didn't register as a whatever. I'm not able to vote with this. And their distress and discomfort is partly based on the lack of information. Maybe they pay attention every 8 years, it does call forward some probably useful discussion that we could have about civic education to make sure people understand those things before, as opposed to on the moment they get a ballot. Jim, you may have other things.
Right. Well, Madam Chair, I would just point out or say that some of it, I think, is some of the interest in this is because of the firsts that we talked about, the first motor voter being implemented this year, first time a third major party qualified for state-sponsored. Those things combined with the fact that this is a presidential election, and not only a presidential election, but basically an open seat for president, which knowing that there will be a replacement at the highest office generates a very special and unique kind of interest in elections. That's a cycle that I've experienced a few times throughout my career, but basically every 8 years when that happens, the interest just seems to soar, and the number of calls that we get, the call volume, it's just typical for the election cycle.
And that's why partly one of the things you'll see as we try to draw comparisons, we will compare to 2008 because that's the last time when that particular circumstance was the case.
Representative Kenemer.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Secretary, it's maybe still a little early, but have you had some time to start to think about the impact of motor voter on third parties and whether or not any of the third parties are at risk of losing ballot access?
Representative Kenemer, Madam Chair, that's been a continual discussion inside and out of our office since the passage of House Bill 2177, as I think you know, and the legislature did take action during the February session to move out the date at which the next determination of the thresholds for party status would happen as a result of the concern that by swelling the voter ranks, we will impact that their ability to participate. We know that as other states are looking at this, the question gets asked, the one piece of data that we don't have from the Department of Motor Vehicle is a party preference if somebody has one. And so it's something that comes on the back end instead of the front end. It's my view that this actually represents a neutral way of being able to approach voters and puts the responsibility where it should be placed, which is on the parties to recruit them as members, as opposed to somehow the Secretary of State's office trying to facilitate that party registration process. It would undo a very important piece of our process, which is that this is an outreach from the Elections Division and not a conversation that you have to have after you've waited an hour and a half at the Department of Motor Vehicles to get your driver's license. But I'm sure that will continue to be an issue and is certainly something for you to think about, and we will try to get you participation by parties. Realize at this point that we'll get down into some small numbers there, and drawing great conclusions is going to be hard. But we do know that there was some active recruitment that went on, and so I suspect we're going to be able to say to some extent that worked, that parties can get people to register as their party if they do their work. Seems more appropriate for them than for the Secretary of State's office, in my view.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As we move along in this process, I remember our earliest hearing, or one of our earliest hearings, about motor voter. And I know that we have a number of county clerks that are watching us or listening today, and will. They'll certainly get in touch with us if things are different than they were told in those early hearings about this. But we were told that this would not be an unfunded mandate for counties. I know one of us here on this committee represents an impoverished community. That'd be me. And I know we're very sensitive to things like this now. So in looking back, could we say that we met that promise, and we were promised that this was not going to be an unfunded mandate to our counties, our county clerks, and that they'd be held relatively harmless in this process? What do you think about that?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, as you know, the legislature did pass with it a package that allows us to reimburse on the basis of some additional funding to each county based on the volume of registration as it grows. It actually is an increment above for all the registration numbers that they have, but proportionate to the rest of the state. It's our hope that has managed to cover costs. We will have to assess that, and the counties will have to take, you know, the clerks, I'm sure, will look at that, and that will be ongoing. This wasn't a one-time payment. This is something that is ongoing for at least a couple of biennia, and then I'm sure the legislature will look at it again. The feedback that we've gotten so far around the burden on the system is that also that there is some amelioration of the additional numbers by the fact that most of this data doesn't come to them in a written card where data has to be entered. Most of this data is now coming to them in an electronic queue that they can then pull from and do what they need to do, and has shortened the time of handling each registration for them. And I feel like I've heard from a variety of enough counties to feel somewhat confident in that statement. Again, it's a question worthy of being asked, and one that we should continue to monitor as we go forward.
Madam Secretary, how much or have you heard from the counties what the impact of, again, I'll just keep coming back to this popular primary election, and what kind of burden that was on the counties as an increase in their workload versus motor voter, if they just had more people voting in the primary? I mean, maybe they haven't said anything. But
I really haven't heard anything, Madam Chair, as far as a noticeable increase of workload or anything. I think that it's the common theme or the discussion is just the increased interest, the heightened interest that exists.
They seem to be amazingly well prepared. This is a open presidential primary. They know it's going to be more dynamic than others. I think as they finish the write-in process, we'll probably get additional feedback about how that has added challenges to them, assuming that it has. If there are any recounts, I know that there may be one or two at the local level. I'm not aware of any that, you know, involves sort of statewide or multiple counties, but that's obviously something that would also, of course, the volume is that much bigger, so it might take a little bit more work. But when we come to you after November, we'll have good answers for all of these questions.
I'll be very curious about how this presidential election cycle has impacted our
absolutely
systems.
Yep, and having the counties come and speak for themselves is always a wonderful idea. I know, know that.
Excellent. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Again, thank you for all your work getting us through this primary season.
Thank you for your attention to this, and we appreciate you as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Is there any other business for the committee?
No.
All right. Well, I will close the informational hearing, and we are adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.